This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 11 and 12, Hermione's Helping Hand, and Silver and Opals. In these chapters, we get a little bit more of Hermione's gangster ethics.
That's a good way to put it. Yes, she does some things in this.
Yeah. And in chapter 12, innocent children get cursed.
Yeah. Yes, and Harry, what did I say about Harry? He is very obsessed with, like, he's like a mean girl, like the quote, like, bitch can't even eat crackers, right? Like, that's what I thought about Harry in that second
chapter. Like, Regina, like, why are you so obsessed with me?
Exactly. Malfoy's saying the same thing.
Yeah. But we begin with chapter 11, Hermione's Helping Hand, and this is our first time recording in a few weeks because you were going crazy in Vegas on Labor Day.
Yes, as crazy
your musical bingo at the bar.
Yes, I'm super crazy, you know. Got arrested, you know. I think it's safe to say that I had a very chill time in Vegas comparatively.
Well, again, doing better than me because we've also skipped a few sessions because Amy's been recovering from COVID, which she's still has lingering fatigue and unfortunately has the brain fog, which is messing up with my memory and my task management, and I hate it.
Gosh, I forget that it's been that long. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been 4 weeks since COVID. But for my COVID. Anyway, so Harry Potter. And then we've got, you know, chapter 11, and as Hermione had predicted, the 6 years free periods were not the hours of blissful relaxation that Ron had anticipated, but times in which to attempt to keep up with the vast amount of homework that was being set. So, yeah, like, basically, they're all, and I guess an American equivalent would be, they're all now in AP classes, like AP Calculus, AP World History, AP French, AP everything.
Sounds pretty intense there for their end of year. But the thing that this felt, I felt like, so we get a mention of that and, you know, it's exhausting. And then we talk about Quidditch forever. You know how much I love that.
Yeah, we've got Quidditch in the morning. And well, first if it's about, you know, they're worried that, you know, Hagrid's kind of giving them the cold shoulder. He's pretending to ignore them. He doesn't say hi to them in passing. And Hermione's like, we've got to explain. We've got Quidditch tryouts in the morning. And my first note is Quidditch, you know, arrow is more important than Hagrid question mark.
I guess to the gentleman here, but yeah, that's kind of not cool. But I think they're also very much avoiding Hagrid because they know that they've kind of probably hurt his feelings, they think.
Yeah. And then because I think Hermione, even if she doesn't have, like, the, you know, greatest affinity towards animals or magical creatures, like, I think she has a little bit deeper of a relationship, I think, with Hagrid. Because there was a point in Prisoner of Azkaban where she was visiting him by herself, like, all the time because the boys weren't talking to her. Because they were pissed off about the broom and about the rat.
Oh, yeah. So she probably has a different relationship than little closer. And then Hagrid kind of has some empathetic maternal qualities to him.
In many ways, Hagrid is, you know, very overtly sometimes, you know, gives off much more like feminine energy. And even so with his, when they finally go to him, he has his flowery apron.
Yeah. That's pretty cute.
And they're just, again, they're just trying to justify it is, but you know, we couldn't have stayed. He would have made us like teach Grop how to tie his shoes or some other crap like that.
Yeah, that would be scary. Grop is kind of scary.
Yeah. And so they segue from Quidditch to the actual logistics of Harry is now captain, and therefore, you know, he has to figure all this out. And Harry's making the comment, I don't know why the team's this popular all of a sudden. And Hermione's like, oh, come on, Harry. It's not Quidditch that's popular. It's you. You've never been more interesting. And frankly, you've never been more fanciable.
Hermione, goodness, girl, keep it together.
Which, you know, I have several notes here in regards to, you know, again, Ron gagged on a large piece of kipper. Hermione spared him one look of disdain before turning back to Harry. And so, you know, I don't, you know, obviously I've never read this as flirtatious in any way. Like, Hermione's just utilizing her emotional intelligence to break it down for the boys who are several steps behind.
Right.
Know, saying like, you know, everyone likes you now, Harry, because, you know, you're the chosen one. You fought Voldemort again. You stuck to your story when everyone wouldn't believe you. And, you know, you've been all through all that persecution. And it doesn't hurt that you've grown a foot over the summer either. Well, and then Ron, trying to interject, you know, is like, you know, you can still see where the brains got hold of me in the ministry, like trying to show her his scars.
Yeah.
And when Hermione's talking about it helps that you got taller over the summer. And Ron is just like, I'm tall, said Ron inconsequentially. There's one meme of like a stick figure of Ron where it just says, I'm tall, said Ron inconsequentially.
Poor Ron. He just can't keep up with Harry. I don't know. That it's pretty funny. But obviously, I mean, Harry seems to be oblivious. And I think the insinuation is definitely he's grown into his looks or something. I don't know.
This got me on a whole thing about, as obviously you are aware of the pairings that happen at the end of this book. So we're not spoiling anything for you.
No.
It just got me on the huge rabbit hole, you know, first about, you know, just Ron's dynamics in this moment that, you know, he can't seem to stand Hermione giving praise to Harry in any way, shape, or form, because he even, you know, copped an attitude when the fact that, you know, Harry said to Slughorn that Hermione's the best in our year.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Harry giving or Hermione giving praise at all to each other seems to set Ron off at this point.
Yeah, Ron is like, this is just, I guess, another indication of Ron's kind of fragile sense of self. And he doesn't even, I mean, I guess, how old are they? Like 16 at this point?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Hermione's 17 by this point.
Ooh, well, so. Oh, Hermione's 17. Okay, I thought you said one.
Yeah, because she was born like soup. It was just too late for her to join the previous year, and then she's one of those like really early birds of the cohort. Anyway, it just got me thinking about again Ron's reaction to all this. You know, looking back in books past, it's like, is Ron behaving this way because he's, you know, recognizing his own feelings towards Hermione and is therefore projecting, or is genuinely Harry and Hermione's relationship as platonic, you know, developing where they're more openly, like, you know, complimenting each other more.
That's interesting. And it's interesting that like Ron can be a little jealous, because I know that for a long time, I think people wanted Hermione and Harry to kind of have a romantic relationship. It didn't work out that way. But I have some very close male friends, one who we've talked to on the podcast. And, mm-hmm. you know, as I tell people, if we wanted to date, we would have. So I kind of feel like Ron or Hermione and Harry have a similar relationship. It's like, something were to happen, it would have happened. But
yeah. And this just overall, this interaction got me thinking about the overall merits about the Romani?
Oh,
you know, ship. And because there is a divide a little bit in the fandom, because it's how do you interpret the quote unquote Hermione settling for someone like Ron? Because the positive interpretation is that Hermione, you know, it's all about whether you attribute attributes Ron's qualities or sometimes considered lack thereof, whether that is a materialistic failing or a spiritual failing. Because for Hermione to accept Ron, you know, as a romantic partner, in a positive sense, it's interpreting it as that, oh, Hermione is not impressed by, you know, materialistic things of like status and stuff. And so she got with the average Joe guy because he's a good guy, you know? So that's a more negative scrutinizing interpretation that sometimes fans have gotten into. It's the idea of, you know, Hermione works so, so hard, you know, to prove herself and, you know, to, you know, accomplish things and stuff. And yet, you know, and yet she quote unquote settled for someone who doesn't, you know, apply themselves in the same way. And again, it's from seeing Ron's traits, not as, you know, it's the sense of, you know, like if you have your shit together with you when you have like status and stuff, it's the sense that, oh, there must be something like working in your brain that you're like, you know, maneuvering around in society and that you're mentally healthy and that you can, you know, you're secure enough with yourself. So I guess it's just how you interpret, you know, the representation of certain status markers, I guess.
Hmm.
So it's interesting because, again, because there are a lot of people in the fandom who see Hermione as settling for Ron. And the fact that there's a sense that, you know, Hermione is so brilliant and Ron has to do nothing to basically kind of prove himself that he's on her level, even if not directly in a, in, you know, an academic or professional way, like in some other way that is, you know, that gives some sense of positivity to his personality and character. Anyway, just thinking about that out loud and how do we interpret, you know, people's strengths as status markers or as spiritual accomplishments and like all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I could kind of see Hermione just based on her behavior here throughout the, you know, she gets really jealous. Like she's really jealous of anybody that kind of outshines her, like the half-blood prince, even though he's, you know, somebody in the book, but not a person. She's just jealous. I guess that is one way to look at it. She's jealous that Harry's kind of like besting her on some of this stuff. So I think I could understand how people perceive, you know, Ron has kind of always been a little average, if not less than, and she's kind of like, well, I'm never, you know, he's never going to best me in this way. I don't know.
That's one interpretation for it. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, because I'll be perfectly blunt. Ron, despite it being canon, Ron Miney is not my ultimate favorite. If anything, I would have preferred her to have gone with Victor Crumb.
I would have too. I'm not even like through all the books yet. I'm just kind of like, where's Victor Crumb at? He was more fun.
But. Yeah. Anyway, so I'll post arrive and Harry's new potions book comes. And Hermione's thrilled because she thinks, oh, he's going to get rid of that other potion book that's better at me than potions. And Harry's just like, no, I'm not. And so he magically rips, you know, neatly, cuts off the cover of the new book and puts it on the old book and mends itself so that all the scribbly copy looks like the brand new book. And shows Hermione looking scandalized. And, you know, I don't see this as scandalization, although she is scandalized that Harry's keeping the book. I think I just relate this more to scandalization of, you destroyed a book.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like, oh my God, what is happening here? But scandalized in more ways than one, Miss Hermione.
Yeah. And then in the paper, Stan Shunpike, as we find out, has been arrested.
Yeah, Nightbus man.
Yeah, the Nightbus man. And yeah. They are I want to say suspect or suspicious. They
a little sus, as the kids
as the kids say now. They're a little sus that the only reason they brought in Stan in for questioning was because they just want to be seen as doing something.
Performative arrest.
Performative arrest, which has a long history, especially in terms of, you know, bad relations of the police with people of color, because I remember distinctly I used to watch this historical drama of a Canadian, it was basically Canadian Sherlock Holmes.
Oh.
At, you know, set in the late 19th, early 20th century. And there was one episode that really, you know, showed that there was a black guy who clearly did not do it, was part of the situation some way, but clearly did not kill, you know, the victim, but that other people were like pushing for him to be arrested because they wanted him, they want to be seen doing something, and being black, he was an easy scapegoat.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's happened in a variety of ways across our racist history, which no one wants to admit because there are certain states who say you can't teach race in school that make white kids feel guilty.
Yeah, we need to feel guilty, fellow white people. That there's a lot of that. That also makes me think, as like a true crime person, there's just or a person that listens to a lot of true crime, it seems like a lot of kind of false arrests are, it's just because they just need to like point the finger at somebody. They need the public to calm down. I just listened to a bunch of stuff about the West Memphis Three, and that's what it's making me think of. Those three guys were innocent, in my opinion. They were just, it was a performative arrest for people to calm down, to make the town calm down.
Yeah. And this segues into, you know, some students are starting to withdraw because parents are scared and they want to keep their families together. And Ron is just like, we've got Dumbledore. It's safer than their homes. And Hermione's like, I don't think we've got Dumbledore all the time.
Yeah, what is Dumbledore doing? He's not icing Harry out this time. That's good news.
Yeah, no, he's not ghosting Harry, but he is physically away from the school, probably doing secret MI5, MI6 shit.
Probably with his weird hand.
Speaking of which, obviously, since we last recorded this, the Queen of England has passed away. And I couldn't help but think of Dumbledore because there's that picture of Queen Elizabeth, you know, shaking a hand, and her hand is blackened. And I just immediately thought of Dumbledore.
I did too. And I was like, maybe now I can call myself like sort of in the fandom, because my immediate thought was like, oh my God, it's like Dumbledore. So that was crazy. RIP Queen Elizabeth. There's a lot of thoughts about her and her passing.
Yeah,
I have no comment. I don't know what to say.
If we want to go into that, my personal perception of it is I think people really appreciated her, like her devotion to duty in the beginning of her reign, especially in the context, because she wasn't, that line in the family wasn't supposed to be king anyway. It was all because King Edward abdicated to marry crazy-ass Wallace Simpson, you know?
Yes.
So a lot of people appreciated her devotion to duty in light of someone who is perceived as disregarding duty. And so I think that carried her for like a good few decades of her reign. But then she got to a point, and of course the culture changed, where that devotion of duty is seen as being cold and unfeeling. And so then the figure of Diana becomes much more popular because she's relatable.
Yeah.
And so, we can go into a lot of things about, again, whether that devotion to duty in the more traditional sense, and whether the royal family was truly able to adapt in certain ways with the whole Harry and Meghan Markle breaking away because of clearly overt/covert racial tensions.
Right.
And then the whole thing about her possibly trying to hide Prince, her other sons, like pedophilia.
Oh, not Andrew. William. Andrew, right. Prince he was Andrew. Involved with Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah. Yeah, that's
So that is my personal perception, that the devotion of duty was attractive in the first half of her reign, roughly. And then, but as the culture changed, it's just like, or if you're going to be that devoted to duty, then at least devote it to a institution that is evolving with the culture, and it's not, and it wasn't.
Yeah. I need to learn more. I don't.
Anyway, thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
Dumbledore's hand, Queen Elizabeth. You know, they're both from England. It's all good.
Yeah. So anyway, there is a hilarious meme. I will draw this back to Potter, where there's a meme of Queen Elizabeth writing a letter. And like the meme says, like, "Dear Dumbledore, you know, it's all going to plan. Like, no one suspects a thing that I have the Sorcerer's Stone."
Oh, man. That's cute. That's
funny. Anyway, so we get to Quidditch tryouts. Quidditch tryouts. Almost, was it more or less amusing or interesting than actual Quidditch matches?
Man, I just can't hang with Quidditch. We got a lot of sports going on in my life, not because it's for my husband's job. So I was kind of like, oh, I'm good. So you just lose me at Quidditch, Harry. I don't know.
Yeah, until they make actual like hovering brooms where we can actually play Quidditch, which I don't think is out of the realm of the possibility within 50 years.
Yeah.
Technology wise. But until that time, I'm not that interested in Quidditch.
Yeah, I just can't.
Yep. And then we've got the hothead Cormac McLaggen, which we met at the Slug Club.
Okay, that's the Slug Club.
Yeah, and he's wanting to be keeper, same position that Ron wants, and clearly wanted some preferential treatment from Harry because nepotism.
Yeah, of course.
Harry is not having, which is good for you, Harry.
Yes.
And so Harry's like, you know, testing everyone, which is a good thing because people don't know, can barely fly a broom, apparently, according to some of these like horrible dumpster fires of flyers. He was able to get a few decent, decent players. And when Cormac came, you know, Cormac saved, you know, four penalties, and then Ron saved five of them. And so, you know, so obviously there's a obvious meat trick where Harry can say, you know, Ron saved five, Ron is keeper. And Cormac Claggan's just like, his sister didn't really try. Rubbish. That's the one he nearly missed. Give me another go. No, said Harry. You had your go. You saved four. Ron saved five. Ron's keeper. He won it fair and square. Get out of my way. And then of course, Hermione comes down and it's like, oh, you were, what is it? I'm sorry. I'm looking. There's a red dot on my book on page that is 225, 226. And I'm like, was that blood from a long time ago?
Whoa. Let's get a little dark. This is turning into Sublimely Gothic.
Like, this is a dark book, but yeah. Like, it legit looks like an old bloodstain.
people, you've had those books for a long time and kids get nosebleeds. I did not, but some kids.
Yeah, did it. You know, because this book is from, you know, whenever Half-Blood Prince came out, 2005, 2006. Somewhere along there. And then, so finally, after all the tryouts, they go to try and visit Hagrid. And we see Buckbeak again.
Good old Buckbeak. Glad you're here. He's still a bit scary. That's what Hermione says. And then Ron's like, oh, come on. You've ridden Buckbeak. Like, he's fine.
Yeah. And Hagrid comes out. It's like, oh, boy, get away from him. He'll have your fingers. Oh, it's you lot.
This is a ringing endorsement. Yes. This is the beginning part of this is very uncomfortable and very, Hagrid's icing them out the best he can. So
yeah. And Harry comes up, is like, Hagrid, open the door. If you don't open it, I'm going to blast it open. And Hagrid comes out with his flowery apron, and despite this glowering down on them and looking, despite the flowery apron, positively alarming, I'm a teacher, he roared at Harry. A teacher, Potter, how dare you threaten to break down my door?
Earlier, I just want to say, before we get too far into this, earlier Harry was like fantasizing that he hoped Hagrid had something to eat at his house, and I'm like, you must be really hungry, Harry. I thought that was kind of interesting. So the apron just made me think of that.
Yeah. It's like, since when have you called me sir? Since when have you called me Potter? Oh, very clever. Very amusing. That's me outsmarted, isn't it? All right, come in then, you ungrateful little.
Tense.
Yeah, no. Olive is in here. And that's
Oh, hi, Olive.
You know, her. Well, she was taking a nap and now she's stretching and now she needs to eat her wet food. Although, I think she's going to go back to sleep. Alrighty then. So they come in to Hagrid's hut. Obviously, Hagrid's not very happy that they dropped his subject. And I just kind of wish they weren't trying to hide behind the, oh, it just didn't fit in our schedules. Like, I wish they just would have said, like, you know, you're our friend. We like you. We like you, Hagrid. You know, this just isn't our thing.
Right.
Like, you know, there are certain, you know, there are certain interests my that other friends have and that I have no interest in. I'm like, more power to you, but it's just not my thing.
Right. Yeah, I guess, like, it's funny because I think that they're probably me 10 years ago probably would have handled this situation similarly to them, and me 10 years later wouldn't have handled it very differently. But what's that?
Can you hear her gorging herself like a pig?
Oh, no. I thought you said something about me looking like a pig, and I was like, okay. It's kind of hurtful, but...
No.
No, I can't hear her at all. Okay. I have my little fan going always where you can hear that too. Okay.
Go, continue.
So I think that, you know, their way of handling this is they're trying to save Hagrid's feelings in the way they know how, but there would be a better approach. Maybe a more mature approach. And then Hagrid's kind of acting. I mean, I was thinking about this because Hagrid's acting kind of, I don't know if immature is the right word, but kind of silly. Everybody in this situation, it's just a little, they need to grow up a little bit.
Yeah. And then we get, there's all these huge, disgusting maggots in like the corner. Is that just as bad as spiders?
No, but I just read, because I like to torture myself, I just read My Best Friend's Exorcism by the same author as the Southern Vampire Book Club or whatever. The Southern Women's Book Club.
Why is it the minute you said that title, I'm like, it's that crazy ass Southern Book Club vampire writer.
Yes. So I just read about like a big worm in that book. It was a tapeworm. So that's what I thought about. I liked that one a lot more. It was more fun. Yeah. But the giant grubs. Now what the giant grubs are being fed to. Oh my God. I didn't want to see him again, but here we are.
Yep. And so I got him to feed to Aragog. And without warning, he burst into tears. And apparently, Aragog might be dying.
What a tragedy.
You just the look on your face, you just made me think of that very popular meme of Loki being like, yeah, so sad. Anyway.
Yes. Oh, man, it's a giant spider. Unfortunately, he's got like a bazillion, you know, little family, but ugh.
Yeah, and even Hagrid says, like, no, there's nothing you can do. See the rest of the tribe, Aragog's family, they're getting a bit funny now that he's a little bit restive. So, you know, I don't reckon it's safe for anyone but me to go near the colony at the moment. It was never safe for anyone except him to go near the colony.
Yeah, yeah, let's all just quarantine that off. Like, goodness.
Yeah, but thanks for offering, Hermione. It means a lot. Which Hermione is smart in that sense that she offered but doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, that I wouldn't even offer. I would be like, oh, it's ugh.
Yeah. Although Hermione can do this more abstractly and freely because Hermione was petrified. Hermione was not there. You know, it was just Ron and Harry.
Yeah.
You know, facing the terrors of Aragog and Fang the dog, but that's about it. So, yeah, so Hermione was never part of that little adventure, so she doesn't have a, you know, traumatic memory like Ron does.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting kind of reflective, it's interesting dynamic up to this point, like, who is with Harry at the end for, like, the certain adventures, because in the first book, it's, like, all three of them until, like, the very end, the last, the Mirror of Erised. Oh, yeah. In the second book, again, it's just Harry and Ron. And then in the third book, it's Ron's injured, and so it's Harry and Hermione.
Oh, yeah.
And then fifth book, it's Harry all by himself. Or fourth book, it's Harry all by himself in the tournament. And then fifth book, it's Golden Trio and everyone else.
The gang was all there. I was like, there was one where they were all there. But in this one, we don't know yet. I don't know yet.
We will get there. So it's obviously Hagrid was, you know, annoyed that they didn't take his class, but it seems like a lot of his stuff was stemming from the fact that Aragog is dying. And so once that is brought back into, once that's like sort of settled and taken care of, you know, they kind of go back to their normal conversations and their normal way of interacting. And Hagrid makes the comment of, you know, even if you applied for time turners, you maybe wouldn't have been able to, you know, fit it in your schedule. And Hermione's like, we smashed the entire stock of the ministry time turners when we were there last summer. It was in the Daily Prophet.
Well, there you go. No option, Hagrid.
Yeah, it just, that's thrown as an offhand comment, but what is like an entire like government's research in regards to the magic of time is just,
forget it, because like,
whatever.
Yeah, some artifacts were in there. Oh, that's quite weird.
Mm-hmm. And somehow Professor Grubbly Plank gets mentioned, and with all three of them, at which all three of them stated categorically and untruthfully that Professor Grubbly Plank, who had substituted for Hagrid a few times, was a dreadful teacher, with the result that by the time Hagrid waved them off the premise at dusk, he looked quite cheerful. And it's like, you don't have to tear down Grubbly Plank. You don't shit on her and her unicorns.
This is very much, you know, they're trying their best with the emotional intelligence they have, but yeah.
And dealing with an adult that has the same emotional intelligence.
Exactly.
In a lot of ways. Even though he went to school with Voldemort, so he's as old as he's in the same like age range, so it's still anyway.
Some of us never grow up. I think I'm
But okay. So they come up into the castle and they spot Cormac McLaggen entering the Great Hall. It took him two attempts to get through the doors. He ricocheted off the frame on the first attempt. Ron merely guffawed gloatingly and strode into the hall, but Harry caught Hermione's arm and held her back. What? If you ask me, said Harry quietly, McLaggen looks like he was confounded this morning, and he was standing right in front of where you were sitting. Hermione blushed. Oh, all right then, I did it. But you should have heard the way he was talking about Ron and Ginny. Anyway, he's got a nasty temper. You saw how he reacted when he didn't get in. You wouldn't have wanted someone like that on the team. No, said Harry. No, I suppose that's true. But wasn't that dishonest, Hermione? I mean, you're a prefect, aren't you? Oh, be quiet, she snapped as he smirked.
So he's kind of like calling her out, but he's like, but whatever. Like, you know, like
it's
fine.
It's calling out in the way that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't care that you're doing this because that doesn't violate my code of ethics, but you're always so often on your pedestal and on your moral high horse.
Right.
That you cannot resist, but be like.
Right. Yeah. Well,
So what do you think about, is Hermione justified in this, or was there another way less directly to sabotage McLaggen that would have been, I guess, less cheating, but I don't know.
I don't know. And I guess it's, you know, there's a bit of loyalty there. She's kind of ride or die for her friends. So that's, you would like to think, I guess there's a little bit of doubt in Harry's judgment too. I mean, she thinks that if this guy smoked them all, then he would have been like, well, of course he has to be on the team and not, you know.
But it does raise the interesting question of, you know, it's not pure, you know, she is ride or die for her friends, but it isn't just purely that. She also saw, you know, him talking smack about other people and, right. You know, put it, you know, the legitimate concern that, you know, are you willing to go for the best talent, even if the best talent, it comes saddled with all of this, you know, again, nasty temper and like other issues. Would you rather have the maybe someone you have to train more or whatever, but who isn't an asshole? So that is a legitimate, you know, question one should have, and one that more easily justifies, you know, in my mind, Hermione's actions, because it's like,
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. Yeah. I think that's all I really had to say.
I mean, I think that people should go for not the asshole and people that can learn things. Wink, wink. Like, I feel like that's what we've talked about, just, you know,
off mic in various shapes and forms.
Yes, exactly.
We have talked about that till the cows come home.
Yes. But go with the not asshole. Go with the person that just needs a little bit of training.
Yeah, but you don't train them because you know they won't be loyal to you because you're not loyal to them anymore. So, yeah,
well, it's a whole mess of issues, yes. But in this instance, I don't suffer mean people. So if he was going to be a jerk to everybody, then she probably saved him a lot of heartache.
Yeah, I tend to be more forgiving of, you know, this than like maybe other instances of our gangster ethics that we've seen in past books. Anyway, and even just here, Ron is like, what are you two doing? Like, he's so sus.
Yeah, he really is. Ron just kind of hide it a little better, I guess.
Again, why couldn't Ron be the seer and have his own thing?
We just can't give Ron anything right now, can we? I guess.
And it's, you know, obviously Harry the writer is writing as things happen. But, Ron is built up in the first book as he has a talent, chess, and that one talent contributes to Harry fulfilling his, like, mission just as much as Hermione's intelligence helps to fulfill that part of the mission with fixing the riddle with the potion bottles and everything. So they built him up in the first book as having a lot of, like, potential and in some ways, like, when you have chess, like, I can't play chess to chase. I don't have the patience for chess. Like, being good at chess means that you are patient, that you understand strategy, that you understand, you know, human psychology to a certain degree, you know, as much as, which you need to understand chess, which is just a mini form of warfare.
Yeah.
I felt there's a lot of symbolism in Ron being good at chess and that being used in the first book. And I just felt like it just goes by the wayside, you know, in future books, whether we blame toxic masculinity or whatever.
It just makes me think of a character on a show I've been watching and they just kind of, I don't know. I've been watching Stranger Things and Jonathan Byers.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of... I was not thrilled with him in the fourth season. Not him personally, but just the way they developed his character. Kind of a bummer.
Before they go sit down, they should be ambushed by Professor Slughorn.
This was something that I was thinking when I was reading. I don't... My profession, sure, there's a bit of, like, schmoozing and things that go on. But in a kind of a academic setting... Is this something that you don't balk at, or is this something that you're like, yeah, it happens, you know, like a professor would want to have students over for dinner? I feel like that was something very, that happened in the olden times, but maybe less so now. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the culture.
Yeah, it's, you know, Slughorn, if he wanted to avoid accusations of like nepotism and stuff, like he should like, maybe have these little dinners like surrounded by a certain theme or a certain subject, be it academics or like some other interest, and tell the students, oh, hey, I have one of my old students, you know, who I'm buddy with, like have a key as a keynote speaker and invite everyone who is interested.
Okay. So preferably to kind of have it veiled as something else, just maybe select people, but
yeah, also... he could get away with his nepotism if he could just, you know, organize it as such where everyone is welcome. And then at the party itself, he can like select who he like really, really wants to invest in, but at least don't from the get go, you know, give this exclusionary air.
Okay. This just struck me as uncommon just because like this is not the environment. And again, culturally, maybe it's just a different environment than I'm used to. So when he's like, hey, come in for the slug dinner or whatever, it's just kind of weird.
Yeah. And it's like, so it's like, oh, I can't come, Professor. I've got a detention with Professor Snape. Oh, dear. Dear, I was counting on you. Well, hopefully I'll be able to persuade him. Yes, I'll see you both later. He's got no chance of persuading Snape. This detention's already been postponed once. Snape did it for Dumbledore, but he won't do it for anyone else. And in all this, you know, because Slughorn also invited Hermione.
Yeah.
But basically ignored Ron as if he was, like, another suit of armor in the hallway.
God, poor Ron.
And so Ron is really rubbed off by this, and to the point where, you know, Harry says, like, you know, it's not our fault we got invited to the stupid party. Neither of us wanted to go. And Ron is just like, well, since I'm not invited to any parties, I think I'll go to bed. And he just storms away.
Diva move. That's fine, Ron. I don't blame you. Mm-hmm. He feels left out.
Yeah. And then in the middle of this, they get the newspaper and see that Arthur Weasley has raided Lucius Malfoy's house again, based on an anonymous tip-off, a.k.a. Harry's, that he gave at King's Cross Station. What was that face you're making?
The Harry's obsession with Malfoy's, like, I'm not a fan, you know, like, Malfoy's a dick and whatever. But Draco, sorry. But, like, this is, I don't know. He's kind of basing this on loose evidence a little bit.
Okay, because in the, you know, it's been a few weeks since we recorded, but I was more veering on this, you know, I was kind of more veering on the side of, you know, that I think, you know, from the lack of information or certain information that we as readers know from the prequels, we know that Malfoy is up to probably some serious shit, and that Ron and Hermione are being really naive in underestimating Malfoy.
Yes, I agree with that. But yes.
But elaborate.
I don't know why. I think it's the next chapter more over this one that I'm kind of like, Harry needs to calm down. But, you know, I don't know. And all these searches kind of come up to be fruitless for now. So yeah. Take a different avenue, Harry. Yeah.
And then the chapter finally ends with one of the new chasers, Demelza, coming up to Harry and is like, I've got a message from Professor Snape. He says you are to come to his office at 8:30 tonight to do your detention, no matter how many party invitations you've received. And he wants to know you'll be sorting out rotten flobber worms from good ones to use in potions, and he says there's no need to bring protective gloves.
Good lord. All right, Snape.
Okay. And then we've got chapter 12, Silver and Opals.
We kind of blow past that interaction with Snape, don't we? We don't really talk about that too much. Well,
there, it wasn't an interaction. It was Demelza giving the message.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't. I'm just in little foggy brained this evening post, you know, arrest in Vegas. But I usually we spend some time in detention with Snape. But maybe I missed something.
No, we got too much of that with Occlumency Lessons last book.
Okay. So, I didn't miss anything.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, it is a bit of a time lapse between 11 and 12 because it was like the first week of classes in chapter 11. And now we are at mid-October.
Okay.
Because halfway through October came the first trip of the term to Hogsmeade, and the whole, nearly the entire chapter is the Hogsmeade weekend. So now it's mid-October.
Time flies when you're being sad, and your name is Ron.
Yep. Harry woke early on the morning of the trip, which was proving stormy, and whiled away the time until breakfast by reading his copy of Advanced Potion Mank. He did not usually lie in bed reading his textbooks, and I'm like, dude, you go to a magic school. You didn't know for 11 years that there was magic. Like, I take issue with, I guess it's a testament to human nature of how you can be desensitized from anything.
Yeah.
That to the point that, you know, magic can be desensitized and it's like, oh, this is a subject I have to learn, and takes away, like, the, you know, the magic out of the magic, shall we say. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've always had a bit of an issue with why Harry wasn't more studious. Or, like, doesn't have to be exactly like Hermione, but maybe for certain subjects have the same passion or academic vigor as Hermione in a very limited sense. And, you know, acted upon it in a few ways. But they just basically kind of portray him as being the same as Ron, the typical teenager who doesn't like to study.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That he's not like, this is the first book that he's kind of like enamored with and obsessed with. And in the past, it was very quickly was just like, I'm at school, not, yeah. you know, a school yeah. of magic.
Yeah. And so he is perusing his book. And what is that, gibbous or ghost?
That was me kicking something on accident.
Oh, dear. So he's mulling over the book. And apparently it's not just like potions that have been altered and stuff. Like the prince has also like written spells of his own invention, it seems.
Yeah.
And Harry's already been using them. There's a jinx that makes your toenails grow really fast.
Ugh, disgusting.
There's one that glues the tongue onto the roof of your mouth like peanut butter.
Pointless.
And he used, much to the general applause, on the unsuspecting Argus Filch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And also basically a anti-eavesdropping spell known as Muffliato.
I could appreciate some Muffliato sometimes.
Yeah. And so Harry comes across this new spell that says Levicorpus NVBL, aka nonverbal. Okay. And he's not the best at nonverbal yet, so he's like, nothing's gonna happen. And so he just throws his wand up and just thinks Levicorpus, and then Ron goes dangling in the air by the ankle.
Right. Well, like, I mean, he didn't think about like the name itself. Like, that seems like it was pretty easy to figure out, but you know, whatever. Just throwing these spells around like they're confetti. It's mm-hmm. ridiculous.
Yep. And then he went like searching through the, like, you know, to the anti-incantation, whatever. And finally, it's like, sorry, yelled Harry as Dean and Seamus roared with laughter and Neville picked himself up from the floor, having fallen out of bed. Hang on. Libra corpus, obviously. Oh. freedom of the body.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I remember talking with one Potterhead, I forget who, but making the point of thinking that all those stupid evangelicals saying that these are real spells, they summon demons and stuff. It's like, if you're a real clergyman, you should know Latin and you should know what that means.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, like with my limited, you know, exposure to linguistics, I know what that means.
Yeah. If people just took a minute and thought about it sometimes yeah. instead of being scared of it.
As you know, I've been following a lot of the news in relation to book bannings across the country. I even sent you that article about the yeah. Missouri one, which sucked really hard.
Yeah,
and I saw one meme that no one is allowed to propose to ban a book unless they have read that book in its entirety and at least written at least 5-page book report on it.
Dude, yes, exactly. That would be... Yeah, because these people have no idea what they're banning. Not banning the good stuff. So
yeah, it's like one of my work colleagues who she grew up in a very evangelical, you know, creationism thing, and she's like, I'm gonna read like the science, I'm gonna read the stuff and prove them wrong. And then she read it and it was like, oh, now she's a flaming atheist.
That's hey. Yeah. The things that crack me up are, you know, like the I mean, if they're worried about like sexy stuff, like they haven't even started on the list of that. But
yeah, it's a terrible combination of already being so like anti-sex education and just talking about sex, even in a heteronormative context, mm-hmm. that even, oh my God, discussing like sex possibly for the coming of age of LGBTQ+ members. Oh my God.
Right. Can you believe? God. It's so disgusting.
Anyway, so
the book bans. Just let me make that clear. I am not anti in the slightest, but the book bans are disgusting. Okay.
Gross and disgusting.
It's like you could edit that in a way. It'd be like they'll be like, disgusting.
No, I assure you I will not, but So tomorrow, Ron said in a muffled voice, I'd rather you set the alarm clock. And then, you know, and Ron isn't that perturbed. Like, he just laughs it off and is, you know, happy. And Hermione's listening to this. And she's like, was this by the prince in that book of yours? Always jump to the worst conclusion, don't you? Was it? Well, yeah, but so what? So you just decided to try out an unknown handwritten incantation and see what would happen? Which, again, Hermione, again, to be very clear, like, Hermione is not, for most of the time, is not fueled by any, like, legitimate sense of ethics. Like, she is very much fueled by her jealousy. She doesn't like being shown up, even by a phantom of the ghost of someone who knows how many years, however old this potions book is. So her motives are very selfish. But even if you want to disregard all the, like, potions stuff, you know, what she's saying is true. Like, you just threw out a spell, a nonverbal spell in your head just to see what would happen.
Yeah, that could be pretty dangerous. I mean, it's not just, like, I'm assuming the, you know, the big three curses, they're not the only horribly dangerous things out there. So
no, they're not. And Harry dodges, like, what does it matter if it's handwritten? And it's like, because it's probably not Ministry of Magic approved, said Hermione. And also because I'm starting to think this prince character was a bit dodgy, which is an interesting concept because Ron puts out, like, you know, and why would we care what the, you know, why would we care what the Ministry of Magic? And that's an interesting thing, like, when your government has engaged in behavior that's, like, so, you know, horrendous that in your mind it has no legitimacy and therefore that has no, like, that has no, whether something's legal or not, has no impact on your moral compass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I see that a lot with my husband because he grew up in a, you know, and got arrested once in Iran for wearing skinny jeans.
Oh, wow.
And gosh, spending like spending a night or so in jail. So, like, you know, just having just complete, utter contempt for authority because their rationale is so stupid.
Right. Right.
Anyway, but she doesn't even have to bring up the not Ministry of Magic approved, just on general principle. You don't wave around, you know, your wand thinking or saying a spell, not knowing what the hell it's going to do.
Yeah, yeah, that feels a little reckless, Harry.
Yeah. Yeah. Who puts their time and energy into making spells, dangling people upside down by the ankle? Fred and George, said Ron. It's their kind of thing. And Hermione brings the very dark context, but we've also seen other people do it. Watching them dangle in the air, making them float, asleep, helpless. Like paying, you know, calling back to Quidditch World Cup when the Death Eaters were tormenting the Muggles.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, buzzkill.
Yeah.
That was different, Ron said robustly. They were abusing it. Harry and his dad were just having a laugh. You don't like the prince, Hermione, he added, pointing a sausage at her sternly, because he's better at you than potions. It's got nothing to do with that, Hermione, her cheeks reddening. And it's like, it has everything to do with that.
Absolutely, Hermione. Come on. Give us all a break.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's very irresponsible to start performing spells when you don't even know what they're for. And stop talking about the prince as if it's his title. I bet it's just a stupid nickname. It doesn't sound like he was a very nice person to me.
She's got a lot of opinions on somebody she's not really super familiar with.
Yeah. Does she know?
Maybe. Oh, maybe.
And this just segues into the notion of blood purity, the half-blood prince, because it's the sense of, you know, there's literally not enough pure bloods to populate the Death Eaters. And so at least some of them have to be half-blood. And yeah, go ahead.
For a minute, they think he's like, maybe it's my dad. And then he's like, because of the blood
situation. Because the Potters were a pure blood family before Lily married into it.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just an interesting thing of, you know, being, you know, again, being a half-blood in this pure blood mania, or specifically trying to be a half-blood Death Eater in this pure blood mania.
Yeah, sorry.
It's like you're viewed with contempt, but at the same time you're viewed as a victim because your parent was bad enough to have a relationship with it's very weird.
That's very complicated.
Reminds me of all the justifications for colonialism.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Anyway, so such is life. Which colonialism, that's another thing that's starting to, like, you know, as people are mourning Elizabeth II, also thinking about, you know, in her reign was a lot of, you know, messy.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with the British colonies because I studied North Africa, which was more, you know, the French, you know, getting rid of, you know, letting loose some of its protectorates. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, and obviously all colonial is bad, but in terms of pure, like, violence and, like, battles and stuff, like, you know, Tunisia and Morocco were pretty easily severed, and then, but it took really long for them to give up Algeria because Algeria had the oil.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yes, and obviously, and how, and there's a lot of Moroccan, for as many Moroccans as I met, there wasn't this huge, deep resentment towards French or its influence, probably, obviously, it's several generations, you know, removed, but at the same time, but like, again, the level of violence and chaos there was, and when you broke away, that obviously has an impact on the public relations, and Morocco, there's not, I personally didn't witness a lot of, like, super nationalist anti-French, you know, stuff, but I'm sure there's lots of that, and, you know, a lot of people are thinking about that in the context of, you know, separating the woman from, like, again, what she represented, and, you know, all the stuff, you know, what stuff was in her control at the time, what wasn't, in regards to colonialism falling apart and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. And then what do we got? And then Ginny delivers a message from Dumbledore that he has another lesson coming up.
Good. He probably needs to talk to old Dumbledore and learn something.
Yep. So then they mosey on over into Hogsmeade, which it's not portrayed as being very fun because it's super cold, it's windy, it's yucky, and they go into what is it? Honeydukes, the candy shop.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I really want a licorice wand now.
Yeah, I could use some candy myself.
I want a chocolate frog, you know, with caramel inside.
Just, oh man, that sounds like, really good.
It just like strings away like cheese.
That's just making me hungry right now.
And then who ambushes them again? Old Sluggy.
Old Slughorn, please come have dinner with me. Like, chill, dude. You're seeming a little desperate.
Yep. And Harry, that's three of my little suppers you've missed now. It won't do, my boy. I'm determined to have you.
Dude, keep it, pump the brakes.
Like, the only way he gets away with this is being a very round, jovial, Santa Claus-esque man. Otherwise, you know, anyone else with a different, maybe, physicality could, you know, this could go really, be read really wrongly.
That is, oh God. I love it.
Yeah. And then he goes on to say, Miss Granger loves them, don't you?
Sure. She's polite. I think that's what we get from Hermione. Like, she's polite, but I don't know. She loves them, Slug.
I think a part of her actually does, you know.
You know,
and she's just, you know, being like, you know, for the boys. I'm just like, oh, I'm just being polite.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Like, she definitely,
because it's probably, even though Slughorn is flawed and he's already shown this favoritism, and, you know, again, oh, I'm not prejudiced, even though, you know, some left-handed compliments and stuff. But I'm sure it's probably, especially when you have fucking professors like Snape, and even McGonagall, they're very, like, she's kind, but she's still very rigid and very stoic. This is probably one of the few adult wizards in her life that, up to until this point, that has really showered her with praise.
Yeah, and now that you're talking about it, I mean, that's kind of what Hermione's like. She's kind of a teacher's pet, so if it kind of taking that to another level, she's probably pretty psyched about
it. So Harry's been dipping out on them on purpose and purposely scheduling Quidditch to conflict with all of them.
Harry.
How about Monday night? You can't possibly want to practice in this weather. I can't, Professor. I've got an appointment per Professor Dumbledore. Unlucky again, cried Slughorn dramatically. Oh, well, you can't evade me forever, Harry. It's
like, God, like, in another context, this would have been a little, like, stalkerish. Goodness.
Yep.
We know that I don't get that vibe from Slughorn. He's just, like you said, jovial. It's just nepotism. Yes,
And so I can't believe you wriggled out of another one. They're not that bad, you know. They're even quite fun sometimes. But then she caught sight of Ron's expression. Oh, look, they've got deluxe sugar quills. Those would last hours.
He's like, he's over it. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
Yep. And so they set off with their candy and go off to the three broomsticks. But before they can get in there, who do they come across?
Oh my gosh. You're testing me and I forgot. I'm looking here.
Fail.
I did fail.
Starts not, with an M.
I was going to say not Mundungus.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yes. And Mundungus doesn't seem all that happy to see Harry.
No. No, he does not.
And he has an old, like, suitcase and all this stuff comes out. And, like, Ron picks up a goblet. And before we know it, Harry has Mundungus in a chokehold with his wand pointed at him.
Oh my gosh, yes. You took that from Sirius's house. So he thinks he's thieving from... Yeah, okay. It's all coming back to me. That,
yeah. You know, I know. What did you do? Go back the night he died and strip the place?
Yikes, Harry, calm down.
Although you got to admit, you know, to be caught with the Black family relics, you know, within months of Sirius dying.
It's a bit, it just seems so blatant that it's kind of, to me, when I'm reading this, I'm kind of like, I feel like he's kind of flying off the handle, but maybe he's not. I don't know.
Yeah. Give it to me, Harry, you mustn't. And there was a bang and Harry felt his hands fly off Mundungus' throat. Grasping and spluttering, Mundungus seized his fallen case, then crack, he disapparated. And who shows up after Mundungus but...
Tonks, Tonks, Tonks.
Tonks, with her mousy hair wet with sleet. He nicked Sirius' stuff. Nicked it! Yes, but still, said Tonks, who seemed perfectly untroubled by this piece of information. You should get out of the cold. She watched them go through the door of the three broomsticks. Again, like, not... She can't even muster the energy to, like, have even a normal conversation or even reassure Harry. It's like, oh, Dumbledore knows about it. Like, we're working on it. Like, with Mundungus and whatever. Like, nothing.
She's going through it a little bit.
Yeah. And Harry continues to grumble. It's like, can't the Order control Mundungus? Can't they at least stop him stealing everything that's not fixed down when he's at headquarters?
Oh, man. That then he kind of has this realization that it's his house.
Yeah, it's his house. It's his stuff. Sirius left him absolutely everything.
Yeah. Harry can afford security. Like, take care of that, sir.
Yeah, it's my stuff. No wonder he wasn't pleased to see me. Well, I'm going to tell Dumbledore what's going on. He's the only one who scares Mundungus. Like, good idea, said Hermione, clearly pleased that Harry was calming down.
They're, like, just bracing themselves for Capsule Carry again. He hasn't gotten that level yet. Well, he's a little bit on the other.
Yeah, well, on Mundungus, yes.
Yeah.
And, Ron, what are you staring at? Nothing. I expect nothing's in the back getting more fire whiskey, said Hermione waspishly.
Gosh, these two need to just get it over with. Like, he's obviously checking out somebody, and Hermione's getting all testy with it. You need to help her out.
Yeah. And then, let's see. And then, what do we got? They go, oh, yeah. So, and then, this is the super scary bit.
Yeah.
This is where we've got... They leave, and there's, like, you know, the weather's too bad. This isn't fun anymore. Mundungus, you know, is a buzzkill. Let's just go back. And so they're going back to the castle, and in front of them is Katie Bell and her friend. And they're arguing. It's like, it's nothing to do with you, Leanne. And the round a corner in the lane, just as he raised a gloved hand to wipe them, Leanna moved to grab hold of the package Katie was holding. Katie tugged it back, and the package fell to the ground. At once, Katie rose in the air, not as Ron had done, suspended comically by the ankle, but gracefully, her arms upstretched as though she was about to fly. Very Christ-like. There was something wrong, something eerie. Her hair whipped around her by the fierce wind. Her eyes were closed, and her face was quite empty of expression. Then, 6 feet above the ground, Katie let out a terrible scream. Her eyes flew open, but whatever she could see or whatever she was feeling was clearly causing her terrible anguish. She screamed and screamed, and Leanna started to scream too and seized Katie's ankles. So,
thoughts Vecna.
What's that?
I said it's Vecna from Stranger Things. It's a scene from Stranger Things. Yes, it is not Vecna. But.
I still need to I still need to binge through. I only got through season two.
It is my what do you, serotonin right now. So yeah,
not that it's bad. It's just my husband doesn't go for horror all that much, and we usually watch things together.
Yeah,
but some serious scary exorcist possession whatever, and it gets to a point where Harry runs and gets Hagrid. Hagrid scoops up Katie and carries her into the castle, leaving the golden trio behind to see what was it that Liana touched. And it's this super crazy ass necklace.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a cursed object. I'm trying to think of the other cursed objects that we've encountered. Not like enchanted. Cursed and enchanted are two different things.
Yeah. So. Like cursed as in, ugh.
Like their mirrors, I've heard. It's kind of like a cool thing to think. I think it's a cool thing to think about. Yeah. But all kinds of the doll, and not Annabelle, but the rag doll. That
Oh, the dolls are creepy. Like to me, the dolls are scarier than the clowns.
Yeah, yeah, it's all pretty freaky. So she's like had an. I feel like this is kind of an interesting moment in the story because we deal with a lot of magical objects, but something of this magnitude doesn't show up too often.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And so Harry picks it up with his scarf and they go back into the castle and they go to McGonagall. And I'm not spoiling anything, but after they come back to the castle in the movie and they've given the necklace back, and McGonagall's just looking at them, is like, why is it when something happens, it is always you three?
That's a great question. That's funny.
And there's a hilarious meme that it's like, she says that in the meme, was when something happens, it's always you three. And then with Harry, Ron, Hermione, it's like California, Texas, Florida.
Oh, that's cute and true, unfortunately.
Yeah. So... what do we got? Good Lord. No, Filch, they're with me. And so, you know, they explain what happened, that it seems that Katie Bell got the package in, she came out of the bathroom with it. So someone in the bathroom must have given it to her. And she said it was supposed to be a present for someone, but didn't say who.
I know who Harry thinks it is. Draco Malfoy. He's convinced.
Yeah, and I'm with you, like, I'm with you in the sense of, like, you know, it's one thing to speculate with your friends about something because a person is a scumbucket and would do terrible things if they had the opportunity, but it's another thing to bring forth this to a teacher like this without solid evidence. So, you know, I'm more in the camp of, you know, it's, you know, Ron and Hermione should be giving Harry more credit, I think, in his, like, interpretations and analysis. But Harry should not be trying to, at this stage with lack of evidence, trying to bring this forth to McGonagall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like, I feel like he almost knows that Ron and Hermione haven't really bought into his whole Malfoy theory, because they're always kind of like, yeah, sure. So if he could get that one thing, like, I feel like there's a little part of him that needs his friends on his side, and they're not there yet.
Yeah, they're not there yet, and thinking, like, oh, if Professor McGonagall takes me seriously, then they'll have to, but she does not indulge him this way, and McGonagall reveals that Draco wasn't in Hogsmeade at all.
Right. Yeah, it was, like, in detention.
He was in detention because he's failed to produce his transfiguration homework, like, 3 times in a row.
Get it together, Draco.
Yeah, but maybe he has other missions to do.
Snape missions, maybe.
I don't know. That's how I went very. My mind went very dirty at that, but.
I like it. I like that's where your head's at right now.
Yeah, great. And then I blame my racy. Fairy romance novel right now.
That's good. I dig it. I love the cover of that. I wish you all could see it. It's so gorgeous. I love it.
Yep. Anyway, so. But I need to go up to the hospital wing to check on Katie Bell. Good day to you all. And then McGonagall leaves them. Harry was angry with the other two for siding with McGonagall. Nevertheless, he felt compelled to join in once they started discussing what had happened. So who do you reckon Katie was supposed to give the necklace to? Because those are the mysteries. Like, who gave it to her? And who was she supposed to give it to? And they make the point of saying this wasn't very well thought out. Like, the cursed necklace didn't even make it into the castle. Not what you'd call foolproof. You're right, said Hermione. It wasn't very well thought out at all. But since when has Malfoy been one of the world's greatest thinkers? Asked Harry. Neither Ron nor Hermione answered him.
Yeah, they're kind of like, okay, like, get off it. Like, why are you so obsessed? It's like when you find a way to and talk about your crush in every conversation or something. I think it was Mundungus. That's what I think it was.
Explain.
I think that he was, because apparently he's like pilfering, you know, Grimmauld Place. And something, the blacks had something to do with it, or it was some like heirloom that they hid and he took it and he kind of had to like offload it really fast. And it was all just a comedy of errors. So that's my theory.
So your theory is that it originally came from the Black House via Mundungus, but that it was, he did not intentionally, he unloaded it, but maybe someone and just Katie Bell got a hold of it by accident, or some nefarious person in between Mundungus and Katie Bell.
I think it was unintentional. Mundungus seems a little haphazard with his, you know, it flew out of the bag. That all kind of like happened. And Sirius, the blacks, like, as we know, Sirius, sure, everybody thought he was a skeez, but he was fine. But Bellatrix, up to no good, related. So that's what I think. That's my running theory at the moment, knowing what I know
that
now.
That it was a black family heirloom from via Mundungus through a comedy of errors. Okay, I'll put a pin in that.
I'm going to write it down because I'm probably wrong, but I want to laugh at myself later. So,
Yeah, because that's what Kevin and Amanda do. Like, they'll go through a whole, like, roundup of, like, prophecies of what Kevin thought would happen and how well or how horribly wrong he got it.
Oh, gosh. We'll see. Ooh, gosh.
Alrighty then. But that time, we can go in to Gothic Geek Out. Which, I'm sure we both picked the same one.
What we were just talking about.
Cursed necklace. Because this is a very old trope, you know, in both Gothic literature and fantasy literature. The sense that there's a necklace or a crown, like some form of jewelry, that possesses some sort of power, good or evil. And it often serves as, what is it called, the McGavin? Or not McGavin,
I don't know.
There's a specific term when there's an object that, like, serves as the plot device because all the people are trying to steal it or want it. Like, the way R2-D2 is, like, this plot device for Star Wars.
Oh, and The Ring, and Lord of the Rings, I mean.
Or MacGuffin? MacGuffin, I think, yes.
MacGuffin, I've heard of that. Okay, yes, yes.
Yeah, so, I don't know exactly, but, so yeah, this is a very old trope, and again, the sort of curse, it's, For a fantasy series that, you know, obviously it typically doesn't rely too heavily on these sort of old school tropes in a way, because, you know, the magic school has been modernized, this is urban fantasy, takes place in our world. It is definitely paying homage to, like, because there are how many, like, mystery novels and, you know, thrillers and gothic novels have this, you know, expensive diamond or heirloom that is either cursed or has something else going on with it.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's a cool trope. I just glanced at it and I guess it was originated from, adopted by Alfred Hitchcock and later extended to a similar device in other fiction. Angus, I don't know who the hell that is, but adopted by. So for some reason makes me think of I don't remember what the Falcon movie is, but anyway, that's kind of a similar.
Yeah, I'm literally trying to look at my bookshelf to see if there's any specifically with, like, cursed necklaces or diamonds that, you know, heirlooms of significance, and I'm not thinking of any immediately at the moment. I very recently read a, like, not a gothic, but a, like,
neutral, I guess, ambiance mystery where it was called Star of the East, where an Indian necklace, like when, you know, diamond was stolen.
Okay. I'm going to look over here too. I mean, does a grimoire fall into that category, or is that totally
like
separate?
As a MacGuffin?
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Again, a MacGuffin can be anything that the protagonist, antagonist, whatever, has to, like, you know, that is being sought after.
Okay.
So it can be anything. I'm just specifically thinking in terms of the cursed necklaces. But obviously, the really, you know, real life example is, of course, the Hope Diamond and the curse that is associated with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was I recently read about a big diamond in India once back since
died. Yeah. There's the joke about the museum in London that you can, you know, see all history except British, except English history, because it's all been ill-gotten goods via colonialism.
Gosh, that's now I'm like stuck on where a cursed necklace might be in any of these books. There's got to be some. I mean, you and I both thought of that immediately, so we'll think of it probably
I should have thought about this a little bit more so in
my mind's again brain fog of long COVID.
I like that trope. I like when it shows up.
I like that sort of fantasy trope. And because some people say it's a very simplistic trope, but like I feel like in my adult life, when I've come back to fantasy, YA or adult, like when they're searching for the magical object, be it the sword or the whatever, and it's just like, oh, I remember this. I like this.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's something appealing about it. I guess it's just kind of the idea that something you could have something magical and not know it, or hopefully in a positive way, not a cursed way.
Yeah, and now we can move on to Tarot of the Day, which the card I picked at random was the Four of Wands.
Four of Wands.
Four of Wands is a card of joyful celebration, blissful happiness, and appreciation for the good things in life. When this card appears in a tarot reading, it is the perfect time to celebrate with those you love most. You may commemorate a significant event or milestone, such as a wedding, birthday, homecoming, or reunion, or you may invite a few of your favorite friends over for an intimate dinner for no particular reason except to revel in each other's company. Relax and let your hair down. Enjoy this special time together.
Gosh, I feel like this chapter was the opposite of that. Because when the typically joyous place, when they go to Hogsmeade, was like kind of a bummer. Like it was like overcasty and gross.
Yeah, like it was a buzzkill. And then the only thing I can think about in just enjoying each other's company is that when they finally got over the hurdle of all the drama with Hagrid and just being able to enjoy having tea with Hagrid again.
Yeah, when they found out about, in my opinion, the joyous of occasion of a dead, dying big spider, then they celebrate.
That would be a celebration to you.
For me, Hagrid's pretty upset about it, but
this celebration that Ron got the keeper position.
There, okay, that can be a celebration. Yes,
it can be a celebration, but then it got ruined. Like both potential celebration or happy moments got partially ruined by Sluggy ambushing, you know, thirsting for Harry.
Oh my god! yes, for sure, thirsting for Harry. Oh, yeah. This card is interesting in relation to these chapters.
Yeah. Well, let me read the reverse meaning.
Oh, okay.
And see if that is more illuminating. Four of Wands reverse can indicate that you are celebrating the achievements of a personal goal, for example, quitting smoking or doing yoga for 30 days in a row. You do not feel compelled to proclaim this achievement to others, instead choosing to create your own special reward for the hard work you've put into it. You may also be in the midst of your journey and yet to reach the finish line, hence preferring to honor this mini milestone privately. When you finally do arrive at the finish line, it'll be worth celebrating with friends and family. So it's kind of... The reverse meaning is kind of, you know, it's just a more quiet, you know, personal acknowledgement of, in terms of, you know, quiet celebrations, I guess I just immediately go to the fact that Hermione surreptitiously cursed Corvac McLagan.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of that was a win of sorts. So, yeah, I was trying to think of any sort of.
I'm thinking of Harry being quiet about the source of his success in potions, and you know, developing his relationship with the Half-Blood Prince.
That is that I was going to relate it to that, but his success of like not finding something that was completely, you know, he didn't accidentally blow up Hogwarts yet or anything with his like, you know, I don't
these random ass spells scribbled in a book, 50 plus years old.
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then, good stuff. And then again, I did not pick a card at random beforehand, so I'm picking one now. Let's see. The card I picked from my Black Moon Astrology cards is Mercury.
And we're in Mercury retrograde right now, so.
Perfect. Are we? Is that why everything's all screwed up now?
Yeah, I think
when
so.
When did it start? I'm a fucking eclectic witch and I'm not following this shit.
I will look at my moonology thing here. I think it started. Oh, it was on the 10th, the same day as the full moon. So that's complicated.
Oh, okay. So it only just started because, yeah, I've been doing like a week long ritual and it's been yielding good stuff. And so it was the culmination of it on the full moon. And so I was very happy with it.
Cool. Good.
And anyway, so we've got Mercury. So what do they have to say about good old Mercury? Mercury, the planet of intelligence and talking, is the closest planet to the sun, also making it the fastest planet to move through the zodiac. The Mercury card suggests you must put effort behind your talk. The god Mercury is the Roman counterpart of the Greek god Hermes, the messenger with wings at his heels or on his hat, connected to everything associated with mind, quick wit, brevity, mental flights, trickery, inspiration, and also movement as in moving ahead and also transits. Mercury gives poetry to the imagination since the gods Mercury and Hermes are related to the Egyptian god Thoth, god of writing, patron of scribes, and those who work as divine mediators and interpreter. The god Mercury and his counterparts also have very much to do with magic and medicine. When it comes to the body, Mercury rules the eyes, brains, nerves, as well as fingers and toes. Let's see how Mercury is the wisdom and the stupidity found in intelligence when it is not connected to the heart or the feelings. Okay, that's something deep. Yeah. I've never thought of Mercury this way. Found the wisdom and stupidity found in intelligence when it's not connected to the heart or the feelings. Which, from what we were discussing, not Harry Potter, but discussing this episode about my interpretations of, you know, the various perceptions of Queen Elizabeth, is she does represent that wisdom and stupidity of intelligence, of the wisdom of, you know, being stoic and, you know, prioritizing duty, but also the stupidity of being so out of touch with her feelings that she, you know, let this marriage between Charles and Diana go through, even though it was obviously going to be a shitstorm.
Right. Yeah.
And not willing to admit that this tradition isn't working anymore and we need to like rebrand.
Yeah. It's very, yeah. I'm trying to think about this in the context of HP right now.
Again, Hermione, obviously being the most academically inclined, you know, form of intelligence, you know, she's most of the time portrayed as being very in touch with her feelings and having emotional intelligence in the way that teenage girls are trained to have more so than boys.
Right.
But also she has a few blind spots in regards to her pride and, you know, doesn't want to connect the dots that I hate the Half-Blood Prince, not because this whole situation is unethical, because someone dares to be better than me.
Right. Yeah.
Messengers, just whole Mercury. There's a lot of messaging in this. You know, there's messages from Snape. There's messages from Dumbledore. There's a lot of message, you know, carrying in these chapters.
Hedwig shows up, brings messages, the little,
So, yep, that's all I've got. You?
No, I'm trying to think about it. I mean, just rapid emotion changes. And I was, when I'm thinking about you know, Harry and Ron and Hermione's kind of consensus, lack of consensus on Malfoy's guilt or innocence, and just kind of how I just think that's such an interesting way that they've handled, Ron and Hermione have handled Harry's kind of like kind of obsession. They haven't called him out on it. They haven't been like, you need to kind of back off, but they just kind of haven't acknowledged it. So that's kind of an interesting communication. Mm-hmm. I don't know, relationship there.
Excuse me. Alrighty then, and then we finally move to our last exercise, fan fiction time.
At the end of chapter 12, when mm-hmm. we're levitating, my fan fiction was what would happen if Hagrid had not come along to kind of like, you know, take her down and chill things out a little bit.
Yeah, because was she still in the air when Hagrid came and scooped her up, or did they finally get her on the ground?
I don't remember specifically.
Yeah, I don't remember either, because I think that's, because if Hagrid wasn't there, you know, if they could break the curse enough to get her on the ground, then they themselves could levitate her, you know.
Yeah.
Her back to the castle. But if they couldn't, because they seem to associate it with her touching the necklace. And so I guess the question is, like,
he bent down, scooped her up, and ran toward the castle with her. Her piercing screams had died away. So she wasn't in the air. She was, mm-hmm. but she was still screaming, which had to be kind of intense. Would they just have stayed and like stared at her, you know, like what would have happened? Cause that's gotta be a pretty intimidating situation to have, like, first of all, you see somebody flying in the air and then they're on the ground, like totally crazed.
I assume someone, you know, again, they've been in dangerous situations enough to be like, messenger, go.
Right. Yeah. That's I couldn't do much with the Quidditch chapter because, you know, I'm not too invested, but and I didn't really want to mess with the necklace this time, so that was my best bet. Would she just have been laying there and they had to freak out, or what would have happened?
I had the fanfiction like, what if, like, again, from what Leanne describes, it seems that, again, someone gave her this package in the bathroom. Like, what if Hermione had gone to the bathroom and came out with this package?
Ooh.
What if it had been Hermione who had been cursed?
Because it was, like, really touching. Like, it was like me holding this pen, like, skin to object, not because they kind of carry it with gloves. So she wouldn't have known. Like, I don't think she would have been like, oh, this is a, you know, this is a cursed object. She would have just picked it up. Would she have picked it up? I don't know.
Because there's sense. I guess I'm like, regardless of, you know, that messing of hands, what if it had been Hermione that had been cursed and not Katie Bell? She was the one floating in the air like Christ and screaming. Well, Ron would have lost his shit.
Yeah, he would have freaked out. Like, stuff would have gotten taken care of very quickly. Maybe we'd have had a moment between Ron and Hermione early on, like a
romantic moment. It would have been nice if it cut through all this bullshit.
Yeah. They're just, yeah, that would have been, I don't, maybe, I yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, what if Hagrid wasn't so quick to forgive them?
Oh, I don't like that. It makes me sad because I was hoping that would turn around quickly because I didn't like that. That just, I don't like, that makes me uncomfortable and sad. That would have been really, I would have been bummed. I don't know if they would have really been deserving of it. I think there could have been an opportunity to be like, look, you know, had a little bit more adult conversation about it. Yeah. But
yeah, that was something I thought of. Again, I didn't devote as much time into the fan fictions because I just immediately went like, oh, what are our exercises? It's like, oh, gothic geek out, the necklace, the ultimate.
Right.
One of the one of the most ultimate gothic artifacts, even though neither of us can specifically name a novel to save our lives right now because we have brain fog.
Yeah, other than, I mean, Lord of the Rings, to me, that's what it thinks of. Oh my gosh, I found what I was looking for. I'm sorry, the Maltese Falcon is what I was thinking of. I read about this in detective fiction because it was an example of the MacGuffin. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. It was used, like, I don't know, there's a whole movie about it. I wasn't too enamored with it, but it's a Hitchcock movie, so it's a Hitchcock movie.
Alrighty then. And thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time where we shall go over chapters 13 and 14, The Secret Riddle and Felix Felicis.
I don't know. By the way, not a Hitchcock movie. I'm just delirious right now. Well, those titles sound intriguing. Maybe there will be another MacGuffin soon.
Yes. Word of the day.
Yes.
Put it on a post-it note.
There we go. Okay.
Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.